Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a new episode of ModPath Chat. Joining us today is Dr. Philip Ip. Philip is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Pathology at Lee Ka-shing Faculty of Medicine at the University of Hong Kong. Philip is an internationally recognized expert in gynecologic pathology. He's made a lot of contributions in terms of publication. Most importantly, he's been a significant part of the last two editions, the fifth and fourth editions of the WHO classification of female genital tumor. He is here today to discuss his recent publications in Modern Pathology, and the study is really probably putting the final nails in the coffin of an entity, the so-called serous carcinoma of uterine cervix. So thank you, Philip, for accepting our invitation.
Thank you, Josh. It's an honor to be invited to speak on the Modern Pathology podcast.
Excellent. And sorry we had to wake you up so early in Hong Kong, but I see the beautiful background, which our audience don't get to see. So hopefully one day soon we can meet in person again. So let's start as we usually start by maybe you can tell us what was the rationale or what led you to do this excellent study?
Yes. Following the publication of the seminal paper by Dr. Stonisu on the International Endocervical Adenocarcinoma Criteria and Classification Project, it was noted that the serous carcinoma of the cervix is rare. This gave us some inspiration or initiative to review our local cases to see whether we observe the same phenomenon. So my collaborator and the first author of this paper, Dr. Richard Wong, and I review 136 endocervical adenocarcinoma in the two of our institutions. And we found among these 136 cases, there were 14 cases that were considered to have a serous-like morphology. In these 14 cases, two of them were diagnosed as serous carcinoma, but the rest of the tumors include the mixture of adenocarcinoma, NOS, usual type mucinous, mycopapillary, or adenosquamous carcinoma. So you can see it's a variety of diagnosis with the same morphology. So if we look at the frequency of our serous carcinoma diagnosis, two out of 136 cases is about 1.4%, which is very similar to the IECC project. And the subsequent validation project by Dr. Paraharan. So both of these studies had less than 1% or just close to 1% of serous carcinoma. But nevertheless, we were quite alarmed by findings 14 cases, that's 10% of cases, which shows serous carcinoma features. So all the credit goes to Dr. Wong, and he put all these 14 cases together. He analyzed them in detail and particularly using the IECC classification recommendations. We studied these cases and divide them into papillary and micropapillary patterns.
I see. So maybe that's a good segue into the design. So how did you come about? I mean, it sounds like definitive diagnosis of serous at that time was very, very rare, but hedging, like a lot of us do that in pathology, expanded it to tenfold. So how did you approach, getting to the truth here? What was the design of your study and what kind of techniques you use?
Well, there's no easy way of going it. And we had to sit down and look at over 300, almost 400, 140 cases. And then we searched for terms that were diagnosed as serous carcinoma, micropapillary carcinoma, and adenosquamous carcinoma. And then we looked for individual cases and slides which shows features of serous or micropapillary component greater than 5% in these cases. And then we applied the IECC criteria using a panel of immunostains that they recommended and added the HPV testing. So the results we have after the analysis, we have found that there were 10 HPV-associated cancers, four of them being micropapillary. And for the other four cases, they were HPV-independent cases, all were gastric-type carcinomas, three of them being micropapillary. So we were using the IECC criteria, we were able to make a diagnosis other than serous carcinoma.
In all 14 patients,
in all 14 cases.
That was brought up initially. So let me just be clear. So out of the 14, 10 you ended up classifying as HPV-associated.
Yes.
Carcinoma, including the usual, what you call the usual type, endocervical adenocarcinoma and two adenosquame, right?
And that's right.
And then the other four are the gastric type. So teach me. I was never a fan of GYN pathology, but gastric type, endocervical, explain to me.
Yeah, well, if we use the IECC criteria first, we can separate out the HPV-associated cancer, which are usually possess a very defined feature that the IECC recognize, is the presence of many apical mitosis and apoptosis, which can be seen under scanning magnification. So these features is not usually seen in gastric type carcinoma. These gastric type carcinomas been long defined. Morphologically, they look to have more clear or granular eosinophilic cytoplasm. Mm-hmm. And the ANSI ratio are much lower than your usual type HPV-associated cancers. And the nuclei more basally located. So these are the original descriptions of a gastric type carcinoma. They tend to express gastric type mucin and gastric type markers. And they tend to be more clinically aggressive and not responding to the conventional treatment that you use for other GYN cancers.
I see. And so I know where this is heading, because the HPV associated, and I know you did PDL, you did PDL analysis, and it sounds like 40% of the HPV associated, not surprisingly, because one imagined the antigenicity had PDL. So is that a correct conclusion that I'm making from reading your paper?
Yes. We found the PD-L1 expressions are only, although our sample size was small, but all of the gastric type carcinoma did not express any PD-L1. So the expression is confined to HPV-associated tumors.
I see. And the HPV was done by, I guess you use a surrogate marker of P16, so you use the usual block positivity to indicate that. To
yes.
to to do that divide between HPV associated or not? Is that how?
Yes. Well, this 316 was part of our immunostains that we used for this study, and all the cases were diffuse block staining with P16. And we also analyzed the HPV genotypes by PCR and sequencing, and we found that there were four cases that were HPV16 genotypes, and another five were HPV18.
So that was the distribution. And as far as other, I know you did targeted next generation sequencing on a subset. You want to share with our audience in the two group, the HPV associated and independent, any specific findings?
Yeah. Well, we only had two cases which had enough material to perform the molecular studies. But in our cases that we found in one HPV-associated cancer, we found an ATM mutation, which is a pathogenic mutation. And we also found missense variants in TP53 and SMARCB1 in the gastric cancers. I think it's too, maybe our data is not sufficient to make any judgment as to the role play in the pathogenesis of these tumors.
I see. Excellent. So maybe this is for future studies, you know, the trend for PD-L expression and the HPV associated and the ATM, if other HRD genes pan out, potentially these could be of therapeutic importance. Now, so what would you say the take-home message beside the fact that if you see papillary or micropapillary, forget about serous, these you're going to try to put them back into the HPV-associated and independent gastric type and what have you, as you discussed. So beside that important, which would not to minimize the importance of that, what would you say the implications of this study and going forward, what kind of algorithm should we follow when this question comes up about serous endocervical?
Well, first of all, if we are having a biopsy, a small biopsy, which looks like serous carcinoma, I think the most important thing is to look at the age of the patient. I think this is very important to recognize that this so-called serous-like carcinoma of the cervix will have a bimodal age distribution. And it goes back to one of the very first study, which was conducted by my mentor, Dr. Philip Clement, in the 1990s. Both Dr. Clement and Dr. Blake Giles and his colleagues from Vancouver, they collected the original series of cases of serous carcinoma of the cervix based on the morphological features that are similar to other serous carcinoma of other parts of the genital tract. I believe in that series, they showed the cases to Dr. Robert Scully at the time, who said these cases were serous. So by morphology...
So basically you had a couple of dots saying these are serous. And look at you. Is that what Dr. Clemens get after he taught you all this? You're debunking the whole discovery. My God, my fellows do that to me, but it doesn't feel good. Good for you, man.
No, but we have to understand that we are living in an evolving time. And with our increased knowledge in the understanding the pathogenesis of disease, and we are looking at the same tumors from a different point of view. And it doesn't mean what was said before was untrue. But I think by all means, these earlier studies were important because they show us two things. Firstly, these cases, so-called serous carcinoma of the cervix, has a bimodal age distribution. And the second thing is because that these so-called serous morphology are often mixed, which is like similar to what we have found in our case studies here. Mm-hmm. But when we get a tumor that looks like serous, and the first thing we look at is look at the age. If the patient is in the right age group, which is younger, around 40, and then we think this could be more likely to be HPV associated. Of course, in the other end of the age spectrum, the first thing we must do is to exclude the metastasis. from the other parts of the GANI tract, which may have a tumor that has the same morphology as a serous carcinoma in the cervix. And then we apply the RECC recommendations, is to look at the morphology, look for the apical mitosis and apoptosis, and then usually we're able to make a pretty confident diagnosis of HPV type cancers. And to validate that, we usually do a P16, P53, and ER in order to confirm the diagnosis. And
how would that, how for those of us who don't do GYN, so you do the P16, I guess is going to be block positive, but how about the P53 and ER?
In HPV associated cancer, almost all HPV associated cancer are P16, which shows a diffuse block staining. And the difficulty with assessment of P16 sometimes could be misleading. The staining could be very strong and diffuse, but if you look carefully, it does look have a mosaic pattern. And when you see this gradient within the staining, that sometimes maybe it's misinterpreted as diffuse block. But when diffuse block staining, it has to be every single cell, has to be strong.
And because the P53?
P53 usually is a wild-type staining in HPV-associated cancers, which is different to endometrial serous carcinoma, which is usually aberrant staining.
I see. And the ER, you mentioned ER, right?
The ER normally will be positive for endometrial cancers, but usually negative for endocervical carcinomas.
So that's a rationale for doing three. So you would like it to be P16 positive in block, like you said, diffuse, P53 wild type, and ER negative to categorize it as HPV associated.
Yes. And also, if we look at the age, if the patient is in the higher age group, we may usually add WT1 to make sure we're not missing the metastasis from the upper tract. And of course, if we have any suspicions, if on morphology it doesn't look like a HPV-associated cancer, we might recruit other markers to exclude a gastric-type carcinoma. And we in this location that we have, we do not have the luxury to have the HIK-1083, which the marker is not widely available in many parts of the world. But sometimes we would add CK7 and CK20. This will show a gastrointestinal phenotype. So that may be useful in those circumstances.
Excellent. Sounds like a relatively practical, a few immunohistochemical stains and good eyes, good morphology, and you can classify, and the key would be not to call them serous. And incidentally, I noticed that all these cases did not have a serous clearly, and they were investigated in the upper tract. They didn't have any serous, so to exclude a secondary involvement. So that's sure. Also an important message, right? Excellent. Well, thank you. I know I learned a lot, and I'm sure the audience did. And again, I can't thank you enough for waking up so early. I don't know that I will do that well, 5 o'clock in the morning, my time, but it's been a pleasure and enjoyable. And hopefully the next podcast, things will be better for all of us. And this is, as you know, we're approaching the year end, and hopefully 2021 will be a great year for all of us. I believe this podcast probably will not air till January, so you could very well be our first guest of the year 2021. Thank you very much, Philip. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share my experience, and it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.